भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by Srila Prabhupada, Canto 4, The Creation of the Fourth Order, Chapter 23, Maharaj Prithu is Going Back Home. Today's text number 15. Utsarpayam stutang murdhni.
Utsarpayam stutang murdhni.
Utsarpayam stutang murdhni. Kramena desha nispriha. Kramena desha nispriha. Vayum vayokshitau kayam.
Vayum
vayokshitau kayam.
Vayum
Tejas tejas yu yu yu
jat.
Tejas tejas yu yu jat. Utsarpayam stutam murdhni.
Utsarpayam stutam murdhni.
Kramena vesha nispriha.
Kramena vesha
nispriha. Vayum vayokshitau kayam.
Vayum vayokshitau kayam.
Tejas tejas to you, yajat.
Tejas tejas
Bolo. Utsarpayan.
Thus placing
to
but
tam
the air
murdhni
on the head
kramena
gradually
avesha
placing
nispriha
being freed from all material desires
Vayum,
the air portion of the body.
Vayau,
in the total air,
covering the universe.
Kshitau,
in the total covering of the earth.
Kayam,
this material body.
Tejaha,
the fire in the body.
Tejasi. In the total fire of the material covering. Ayuyajat. Mixed. Translation. In this way, Prithu Maharaj gradually raised the air of life up to the hole in his skull, whereupon he lost all desire for material existence. Gradually, he merged his air of life within the totality of air, his body with the totality of earth, and the fire within his body with the totality of fire. Please repeat. In this way, Prithu Maharaj gradually raised his air of life up to the hole in his skull, whereupon he lost all desire for material existence. Gradually he merged his air of life with the totality of air, his body with the totality of earth, and the fire within his body with the totality of fire. Srila Prabhupada's purport. When the spiritual spark, which is described as 1/10,000th part of the tip of a hair, is forced into material existence, that spark is covered by gross and subtle material elements. The material body is composed of 5 gross elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and 3 subtle elements, mind, intelligence, and ego. Prabhu, could you stop doing that? It's a little distracting.
Just here. Simply.
When one attains liberation, he is freed from these material coverings. Indeed, success in yoga involves getting free from these material coverings and entering into spiritual existence. Lord Buddha's teachings of nirvana are based on this principle. Lord Buddha instructed his followers to give up these material coverings by means of meditation and yoga. Lord Buddha did not give any information about the soul. But if one follows his instructions strictly, he will ultimately become free from the material coverings and attain nirvana. When a living entity gives up the material coverings, he remains a spirit soul. This spirit soul must enter into the spiritual sky to merge into the Brahman effulgence. Unfortunately, unless the living entity has information of the spiritual world and the Vaikunthas, there is a 99.9% chance of his falling down again into material existence. There is, however, a small chance of being promoted to a spiritual planet from the Brahman effulgence, or the Brahma Jyoti. This Brahma Jyoti is considered by impersonalists to be without variety, and the Buddhists consider it to be void. In either case, whether one accepts the spiritual sky as being without variety or void, there is none of the spiritual bliss which is enjoyed in the spiritual planet. Well, what you're doing was a piece of cake compared to this. Does anybody have any authority? Anyway, yeah, just close the windows. Oh. Okay. Again, in either case, whether one accepts the spiritual sky as being without variety or void, there is none of the spiritual bliss which is enjoyed in the spiritual planets, the Vaikunthas or Krishna Loka. In the absence of varieties of enjoyment, the spirit soul gradually feels an attraction to enjoy a life of bliss, and not having any information of Krishna Loka or Vaikuntha Loka, he naturally falls down to material activities in order to enjoy material existence. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Utsarpayam stitam murni. Kramina vesha nisprihaha vayum vayaukshito kayam tejas tejas yuyajat
Om Agyana Timurandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Dhammayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vivacha Patitanam Avinibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
The title of the chapter is Maharaj Prithu's Going Home. So the section we're on is when he actually leaves his body and goes back to Godhead. But the way Maharaj Prithu is doing it is probably not exactly the way we will do it, because he's a along with being a Rajarshi, a Rajarishi, he's a mystic yogi. So he's able, by his mystic power, to reverse the process that happened at birth. You know, at birth, we're injected into the womb, and then we're covered by gross and subtle elements, and so he's reversing all that. Gradually he merged his air of life with the totality of air, his body with the totality of earth, and the fire within his body, the totality of fire. So interestingly, in the first paragraph of the purport, Srila Prabhupada starts talking about Lord Buddha. He says, Lord Buddha's teachings of nirvana are based on this principle. Lord Buddha instructed his followers to give up these material coverings by means of meditation and yoga. Lord Buddha did not give any information about the soul, but if one follows his instructions strictly, he will ultimately become free from the material coverings and attain nirvana. So in Sanskrit, nirvana means a blowing out. It's like, here's life. Life. Ita dipo nivatashto. Nengate sopamasprata yogino yatta chittasya yunjato yogamatmana. As a lamp in a windless place does not waver, so the soul whose, what's the rest of it? I forget. Whose mind is fixed in transcendence. I have to look it up. I forgot the rest. Anyway, we have to become like that. So the Buddhist conception is, it's a blowing out. Life comes from nothing and returns to nothing. Nothing thou art, nothing thou beest. So that's definitely not our understanding. Once upon a time, long ago and far away, one fine lad named Steve approached Swamiji. Steve became Satsarup Brahmachari, then he became Satsarup Maharaj, then he became Swamiji, Srila Prabhupada's biographer. But at first, Steve said to Swamiji, Swamiji, 22nd Avenue, how can I understand that I'm just nothing? Because he'd been reading a lot of Buddhist stuff, as people were wont to do in those days, and nowadays too. It's very attractive, and we'll get into that a little bit, why. How could I understand that I'm just nothing? So Prabhupada, you are not nothing. You are something. But you are not this body. Yeah. So we're not nothing. We're something. But we're not this body. Also in Western literature we have this. Macbeth has just learned of the untimely death of his wife, Lady Macbeth. Famous soliloquy, it starts tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. So here's the relevant part. Out! Out, brief candle! Out, brief candle! Life's but a walking shadow. A poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. So in his madness, in his grief, Macbeth is thrown into this kind of existential despair, where life is absurd, you know, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. And this is, Prabhupada talks about this in his purport to Gita 4.10. Vitaraga bhayakrodha manmayama mupashitahum bhavo jnana tapasaha bhulka madbhava magatahum. Being freed from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, to know him as to love him. And thus they all attained transcendental love for me. By the way, here's the rest of that verse. Yeah. As a lamp in a windless place does not waver, so the transcendentalist whose mind is controlled. See, I didn't have a controlled mind, so I forgot the verse. Remains always steady in his meditation on the transcendent self. Now in 4.10, the verse I just quoted, in the purport, Prabhupada talks about three reasons that we can't go back to Godhead. Attachment to matter. Fear of becoming persons again, because material life is such a burn, you know. We don't want it. That's why Buddhism is so attractive. So here's in the purport, Prabhupada talks about the last, anger. So this is what impels us to adopt, to embrace a kind of voidistic, you know, worldview. Weltanschauung. Furthermore, there are many persons who cannot understand spiritual existence at all, being embarrassed by so many theories and by contradictions of various types of philosophical speculation. They become disgusted or angry. Sound familiar? And foolishly conclude that there is no supreme cause and that everything is ultimately void. Such people are in a diseased condition of life. Some people are too materially attached, and therefore do not give attention to spiritual life. Some of them want to merge into the supreme spiritual cause. That's Nirvishesh. And some of them want to merge in. Okay, and some of them disbelieve in everything, being angry at all sorts of spiritual speculation out of hopelessness. This last class of men take to the shelter of some kind of intoxication, and their affective hallucinations are sometimes accepted as spiritual vision. Okay, so, yeah. So we just, you know, in psychoanalysis they talk about the tensions that arise from, you know, we're being pushed by so many desires. So as a counterpoint to this, people become Buddhists sometimes because it's a relief from this tension of desire. Then you just, out, nothing. It's an attractive philosophy if you all you can think about is how bad material life is. It's like Prabhupada gave the example once that if somebody's bad, if a child is bad in class, and if he's too bad, if he's incorrigible, you know, he might just say, "Go stand in the corner, right? Face the wall, say nothing." So that's kind of what Buddhism. You know, Lord Buddha came to stop gross abuse of the Vedas. You know, stop animal slaughter, basically. So it was like, go stand in the corner, everybody, you know, for hundreds of years, thousands of years. And Shankara has to come and finally reestablish the Vedas, but it's too much of a leap to personalism, so he's got to establish it in an impersonal way. Okay. So also, Nirvana is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. Anybody know? Gita scholars, Gita lawyers. Prabhupada said we should know the Gita like the Christians know their Bible, or like the lawyer knows his law books. Three places in the Gita, Krishna. It's. I'll give you a hint. It's in a compound. It's not just standing alone. First is the second chapter.
Yeah.
272.
Esha brahmistiti partha nainam prapya vimuhyati stidvasyam antakaleti brahma nirvanam richati.
And that's how it appears in the fifth chapter, verses chapter 5, text 24 through 26. Same phrase, brahma nirvana. But in chapter 2, the context is different. So the translation of the 272 was, that is the way of the spiritual and godly life, after attaining which a man is not bewildered. Being so situated, even at the hour of death, one can enter into the kingdom of God. So it's the kingdom of God in 272. But in 524 through 26, when the context is Krishna is reaching out to the mystic yogis, that's Krishna's compassion. You know, all these verses that don't appear, sometimes a lot of the verses in the Gita don't appear to be directly bhakti, but actually they are. Because this is Krishna's compassion. He's reaching out to all of us in the far corners of Maya, whether we're lost in karma, gyan, or yoga. So in the fifth chapter, you find at the end of the chapter, you know, the mystic yogis. And it's translated as liberation of the supreme. Because that's the angle. That's the angle Chris is coming in on. Okay, let me just read this. Everything is context. So the context here is, one whose happiness is within, who is active and rejoices within, and whose aim is inward, is actually the perfect mystic. He is liberated in the supreme. There is the Brahma Nirvana. And ultimately he attains the supreme. Those who are beyond the dualities that arise from doubts, whose minds are engaged within. See, it's very mysterious, isn't it? Within. What's within? That Krishna describes. Who are always busy working for the welfare of all living beings, and who are freed from all sins, achieve liberation of the supreme. One more. Here it is. Those who are free from anger and all material desires, who are self-realized, self-disciplined, and constantly endeavoring for perfection, are assured of liberation in the supreme in the very near future. So, Brahma Nirvana, different context?
Different
meaning. Now, even in spiritual life, as we know, we drag the ghosts of karma, jnana, and yoga into the devotional process. And to the extent that, you know, we're not freed from those ghosts, we're haunted by those ghosts. So, like Prabhupada says, everyone is ghostly haunted. And then Prabhupada says, we have to become godly haunted. So, when we're still ghostly haunted, you know, now here's an example. (clears throat) 1972 is a letter written by a godbrother of mine, Srila Prabhupada, complaining that the devotees are always fighting. They're immature. They're simply childish. And that's because they're impersonalists. So Prabhupada knows what this person needs to hear, so he writes back. It is not so much that because there may be some faults in our godbrothers and godsisters, or because there may be some mismanagement or lack of cooperation, that this is due to being impersonalists. No. Prabhupada said no. It is the nature of the living condition to always have some fault. Even in the spiritual world, there is some fault and envy. Sometimes the gopis will quarrel over Krishna's favor. And once Krishna was so much attracted to Radharani that by mistake he tried to milk a bull instead of a cow. And sometimes when the gopis used to put on their dress and makeup for seeing Krishna, they would be too much hasty and smear kumkum and mascara in the wrong places. And their ornaments and dresses would appear as if small children had been trying to dress themselves. And they were not very expert. Like that. Prabhupada obviously dictated this letter. Like that. There are so many examples But it is not the same as material fault or material envy. So Prabhupada at first, he's saying these things and you're kind of scratching your head. What does Prabhupada mean? It is transcendental because it is all based on Krishna. Sometimes when one gopi would serve Krishna very nicely, the others would say, oh, she has done so nicely. Now let me do better for pleasing Krishna. That is envy, but it is transcendental. Without malice. There's the difference. Without malice. Malice toward none. It's pure envy. Let me do better. This way it's always increasing. That's called a superior natural sequence. So we shall not expect that anywhere there is any, and Prabhupada uses the U word, utopia. The Greek word, utopos, no place. There's no such thing where everybody is always getting along, everybody understands everybody. Because that's boring. Now, I know what you're thinking, that it's you want relief from fighting and you want loving exchanges, but it gets better. Listen to what Prabhupada says here. Because devotees are persons, therefore there will always be some lacking. Prabhupada's equating personhood with some, you know, there's going to be some tension, some lacking, some, but listen to this. But the difference is that they're lacking because they have given up everything to serve Krishna. Now, the context is 1972. The only way to be a devotee in 72 is you're in the temple. You've given away everything. Like Steve threw all his manuscripts down the incinerator at 26 Second Avenue, you know, like that. So that's the context. So this is why Prabhupada says, money, they've given up money, jobs, reputation, wealth, big educations, everything. Their lackings have become transcendental because despite everything they may do, their topmost intention is to serve Krishna. And then Prabhupada quotes, quote, one who is engaged in devotional service, despite the most abominable action, is to be considered saintly because he is rightly situated. And then Prabhupada continues, Prabhupada knows what this person needs to hear. The devotees of Krishna are the most exalted persons on this planet, better than kings, all of them. So we should always remember that. And like the bumblebee, always look for the nectar or the best qualities of a person. Not like the utopians, who are like the flies who always go to the open sores or find the faults in a person. And because they cannot find any utopia, utopos, no place, doesn't exist, or because they cannot find anyone without faults, they want to become void. Void. Jilo, shunya. Merge, nothing. They think that is utopia, to become void of personality. Now Prabhupada wraps it up. So if there is sometimes slight disagreements between devotees, it is not due to impersonalism, but it is because they are persons, and such disagreements should not be taken very seriously. The devotee is always pessimistic about the material world, but he is very optimistic about the spiritual life. So in this way, you should always consider that anyone engaged in Krishna's service is always the best person. Whew. Okay. Now, this is part of a lesson I teach in my Foundaracharya seminar, and it's an antithesis. The thesis is, because Prabhupada's farewell request to all of us, for all generations, for all time, is to cooperate. And then, in this letter, he's saying, don't expect utopia, because you're all different. Only Krishna, Rasol Vaisa, the reservoir of all pleasure, the ultimate source of all energies, is capable of relating perfectly with all of his different energies. He likes to love, he likes to fight, he likes to play, he likes intrigue, he likes everything. But because we're tiny, even in the pure liberated Golok state, it's not that we can necessarily relate to everybody, because we're tiny. You know? But Krishna can. Because Krishna is the ultimate variety, is the spice of life, or variety is the mother of enjoyment. So it's too much for us. We're tiny. And therefore Rupa Goswami says we must seek like-minded association. And he, by that he means association of devotees who are very Krishna conscious, very advanced, who can help us like that. Okay, so thesis, cooperate. Antithesis, don't expect utopia. Synthesis. Here's the synthesis, and Prabhupada brings it right home to this place. Listen to this. How to cooperate and find unity amid personal diversity. Okay, so this is another letter. This is the next year. Fast forward to 1973. Quote, material nature means dissension and disagreement, especially in this Kali Yuga. But for this Krishna consciousness movement, its success will depend on agreement, even though there are varieties of engagements. In the material world, there are varieties, but there is no agreement. In the spiritual world, there are varieties, but there is agreement. That is the difference. The materialist, without being able to adjust the varieties and the disagreements, makes everything zero. You know, like you turn on the news and you hear, you know, so-and-so country has been sanctioned, Syria has been sanctioned, Iran has been sanctioned, place, and then they just say, well, we don't accept that. We're just going to take our marbles or take our oil and go home, you know. So because there's no common center. There's no beloved. There's no. When we saw the house, what is it? The Women of Bhakti film recently. Brilliant statement by our great god sister Rukmini. That she goes, at the center of existence, there is a beautiful love affair. Radha and Krishna. That's at the center of existence. Isn't that wonderful? That's where everything comes from. Radha and Krishna. Let me just, I digress. That's another class. Okay, that is the difference, Prabhupada says. There is agreement, even though there's variety. The materialist, without being able to adjust the varieties and the disagreements, makes everything zero. They cannot come into agreement with varieties. But if we keep Krishna in the center, then there will be agreement in varieties. This is called unity in diversity. I am therefore suggesting, and here's where Prabhupada brings it home to Mayapur. I am therefore suggesting that all our men meet in Mayapur every year during the birth anniversary of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. With all GBC and senior men present, we should discuss how to make unity in diversity. But if we fight on account of diversity, then it is simply the material plus. Please try to maintain the philosophy of unity in diversity. That will make our movement successful. And then Prabhupada makes a reference to something that's happened where some people have left. One section of men have already gone out. Therefore, we must be very careful to maintain unity in diversity. And remember the story. Now this is great, because he's writing a letter to a person who was the son of a Baptist minister and who was very educated and who knew, he didn't know Hitopadesh, but he knew Aesop's fables, where that's the source of Aesop's fables is Hitopadesh. So Prabhupada says, and remember the story in Aesop's fables of the father of many children with a bundle of sticks. When the father asked his children to break the bundle of sticks wrapped in a bag, none of them could do it. But when they removed the sticks from the bag and tried one by one, the sticks were easily broken. So this is the strength in unity. If we are bunched up, we can never be broken. But when divided, then we can become broken very easily. So the more we know, our common center, the life, the teachings, the mood, the mission of our great founder Acharya, who was so transparent to Krishna. Practically speaking, to develop love for our founder Acharya is tantamount to developing Krishna Prema. As Prabhupada once told my godbrother, the late Aniruddha Prabhu, what attracts you to me is my love for Krishna. Because Aniruddha had just said, oh Prabhupada, you're so merciful to me. You're so kind. I love you, Srila Prabhupada. What attracts you to me is my love for Krishna. So, we won't probably, unless we're one of those people that come out of the Himalayas, like next year is the Mahakumbha Mela in Allahabad. And these people who know the arts, you know, apane juvati pranang prane panam tatapare prana panagati rudva. Listen to the word prana is in this verse. Pranayama parayana apareniyatahara pranan prane shujuvati. And there are even others who are inclined to the process of breath restraint to remain in trance. And that's, they practice stopping the movement of the incoming breath into the outgoing and the outgoing breath into the incoming. And thus, at last, they remain in trance, stopping all breathing. There's more, too, I forget. So the more we find our unity is our founder Acharya. And our diversity is our special, unique offering, finding our mission within his mission. And there's so much variety. And our founder Acharya is so empowering. He's so encouraging. Within the parameters, of course, of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, he's encouraging us to find ourselves. This is above all, another Shakespeare, as Polonius said to Laertes, this above all, Laertes, to thine own self be true. Of course, he didn't know the true self, but he was on the way. So Prabhupada's encouraging us to find ourselves and find our true offering to him, our ultimate offering, and just do it. He's our common center. And when we have the common center, then, and then when we're mature and we're secure in that common center, then we can acknowledge so much diversity. We're not threatened by diversity. We embrace it. We celebrate our diversity, and then we're strong. Yeah, good. Okay, I'm going to read the verse again if you have any questions or comments. So, this is how Prithu Maharaj did it in another time and place. In this way, Prithu Maharaj gradually raised his air of life up to the hole in his skull, whereupon he lost all desire for material existence. Gradually he merged his air of life with the totality of air, his body with the totality of earth, and the fire within his body with the totality of fire. Questions? Yahama Prabhu. Who? And then Radhika. Mike. Mikey.
Krishna. Those who reach, thank you for a nice class. Hare Krishna. Sureshwar is a wonderful speaker. He should be speaking in front of thousands of people. Isn't it a fact? Hare Bol.
Only if I take your seminar and I'll give a seminar.
We learn from Prabhupada, from Shastra, that attaining Brahman is the transcendental position. It's a blissful position. It's a position of ananda. We're learning in this verse that you can only achieve it after you become free from material desire. And so to become free from material desire is a form of relief. And now we're hearing that even though one achieves that position, which is a position of bliss, they want to come back to the material position. So, as Prabhupada said, 99.9 fall down. So if they're in a position of bliss, which is higher than the material, which is ananda, why, if they're experiencing ananda, would they want to come back down to whatever, satvaguna or whatever? Mm. So is it the idea that even though it's blissful, the desire to be active is so strong that the desire to be active is more blissful than ananda. It's like a vacation that you get bored. You get bored at some point.
Does everybody understand the question? Yeah. There's so much variety here, but there's also a lot of pain, misunderstanding, hurt. It all ends. Even if you have it all, it ends. Right. Get out. Prabhupada says, get out. Right. Well, as you were asking the question, I just glanced at the answer in the purport. Prabhupada says, after, you know, the 99.9%. I'll just read the last three sentences. In either case, Prabhupada says, whether you think it's the ultimate is impersonal or void, you know, they're close. Either the white light or the nirvana. There is none of the spiritual bliss which is enjoyed in the spiritual planets, the Vaikunthas or Krishna Loka. And here's the line. In the absence of varieties, we're not homogeneous beings. In the absence of varieties of enjoyment, the spirit soul gradually feels an attraction to enjoy a life of bliss. And not having any information of Krishna Loka or Vaikuntha Loka, he naturally falls down to material activities in order to enjoy material varieties. Don't forget, the absolute truth is not just
God.
It's, as Rukmini said, Radha Krishna. At the center of existence, there is this beautiful love affair called Radha Krishna. That means that the absolute truth is relational. Krishna only exists in relationship to it's Krishna and his energies, the sun and the sunshine, Radha, Krishna. And us being part of Krishna, that's us too. That's how we're constituted. So even if we rise up, Aruya Krishna Param Padang Tata. We have to fall down because we get bored. Prabhupada sometimes says it's boring. You know, it's such a relief. You know, sleep is such a relief from the trials and tribulations of life. You just, okay, let me just go to sleep. But then you can't stay in bed forever. That gets boring. Even if your life is a mess and you don't want to even take your next breath, I've been there. You don't want to even take your next step. You don't want the clock to tick one more tock because it's going to be full of pain, right? But still, it's boring just standing still. So the Brahmajyoti is ultimately boring. So we're forced. Prabhupada didn't explain it, but he says, there's, however, a small chance of being promoted to the spiritual planets from the Brahman effulgence. I don't know how, but... Anyway, yeah, so because we're persons, and we're part and parcel of Krishna, and Krishna loves variety infinitely, he has infinite energies, parasi shaktir vividhai vishruyate, therefore us being a part and parcel of him, we like variety too. Variety is the spice of life, variety is the mother of enjoyment, but if it's too varied, it's chaotic, and if it's too the same, it's boring. So we like this veda, you know, the oneness. We like sameness and difference. That's reality, the beautiful. That's what Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj once wrote a book called Reality, the Beautiful. Is that all right? Okay. Radhika Bhatta.
Can you just shed the very thing that I was going to?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Together, these things sum up everything, the variety and the similarity, or we say the one in the many. The one is always the many, and the many is the one. So anyhow, you mentioned it in your last sentence.
Yes, but only Radhika Mata could make it a sutra.
That is what it is. It is a sutra.
This is a kavi. You should kavi ma. Any more questions or comments? Yes, Sadhana Mata.
Thank you.
microphone.
Hare Krishna. I was hoping you could explain a little bit about, okay, devotees, we're all can be different, have different natures, but to still respect and honour each other, even though we might be doing it a little bit different in our devotional service to Srila Prabhupada? And do we just avoid that person because maybe they're thinking a different way to us? Or, I don't know. Could you make a comment on that, please?
Let me try to rephrase that. How do we respect one another even though we're so different?
Yes.
Okay. This is a very interesting question. And the question for me, anyway, arises from where we've come from. We come from, the modern age is so impersonal. Even Prabhupada, in his 1972 Vyas Puja homage, explaining the meaning of Vyas Puja at New Vrindavan in 1972, referred to an incident that he read about when he was in New York City. Famous incident. 1967, there was a lady in New York City named Kitty Genovese. Anybody remember this name? Kitty Genovese? Okay, I'm... Kitty Genovese was stabbed to death in her flat. And she staggered out of her flat as the guy fled. And she cried for help. She cried for help for the longest time. And people heard her cries. People heard her. And nobody came to her aid. And it was like the ultimate example of how nobody cares, especially in the big city. You know, in a non-varnashram, here's where I'm coming from, in a non-varnashram world, it's everybody for himself. You know, in a functional, in a human society where all the varnas and all the ashrams are interdependent, that's the key word, interdependent, we may not all be able to relate to each other's nature. Just like even Bhima on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, when he finally finished Dushasan, you know, for disrobing Draupadi, you remember from the Mahabharata what he did? You know, he tore out his heart and he was drinking the blood, and when he did that, the whole fight stopped. And all these heavy-duty, pedigree, thoroughbred Maharatis were looking at Bhima like, "No! He's too much! You know? This is over the top, you know." I remember reading in Sharanagati, you used to have a newsletter there once upon a time? No? This is a Sharanagati alumni. I remember in Sharanagati, where it gets really cold in the winter. Is Hari Priya here? No. Yeah? You here? Oh, there you are. And then this is back before there were many buildings, I think, in Sharanagati. And then, you know, when you're living simply and thinking highly, then you depend on one another. And you're so glad to see a person because chances are that person has something that's going to help you survive. That's Daiva Varnashram, God-centered Varnashram, simple living and high thinking. All the parts of the social body and all the phases of life, all the ashrams, they're interdependent. So much so that everybody, even if you can't relate to everybody because you have a different nature, you so much, everybody needs everybody. But we're coming from a situation where we've, you know, Kali Yuga is so impersonal. On the one hand, as Prabhupada said, the closest thing to pure love in the material world is the love of the mother for the child. But in Kali Yuga, as I've said before in class, Prabhupada is twisting his hand like a knife. His eyes are bugging out, and he's saying, "Even in the womb, they are coming after you with knife. Even in the womb, this is Kali Yuga, yes. Kali Yuga." Prabhupada's eyes were, I was right on the side of him, and I could see his eyes bugging out of his head. So, I mean, Kali Yuga means, you know, the most vicious forms of passion and ignorance. We're just so selfish, you know. So your question arises from our background. You know, how can we not appreciate each other? But we're trying to set ourselves up as independent gods. You know, we're living in our little cubby holes, our little flats, or you know, and in a non-varnashram society, you just try to be. I don't want to be dependent on anybody, Prabhu. Well, guess what? You know, we are dependent creatures. We're constituted that way. Krishna is ashray, and we're ashrita, but we artificially try to become independent. So, what's it going to take? We just get so sick of it, don't we? I get so sick of being so selfish myself and being so impersonal. And just like we had a nice exchange on the road yesterday, and that was very sweet. And we got to know each other a little more, and now I understand how to relate a little better. Anyway, we all need each other, whether we understand it or not. Okay. Any more questions? It's kind of late. Right. So, Jai, let's have a nice festival. Yes, Prabhu, one more. But you can go if you want to go, if you need to go. Prabhu, have the microphone.
And regarding the existence of the soul, I mean, how, in your opinion, is it explained that there is no soul as per Buddhists, which means that there are no karmic reactions also? Is it concluded like that?
It depends on what kind of Buddhist you're talking to. If you just asked a question about Christianity, it would depend on what denomination of Christianity you're talking. I mean, so one answer doesn't fit all. But it's a very interesting question. We could talk later.
Yeah.
We'll take off and do it.
Thank you.
It's too, you know, there's too much to talk about there. You know. Yes, Mahatma, one more.
Prabhu.
But there's basically devotional and non-devotional Buddhist sects. And they're very different.
I think also part of the answer is that a lot of people don't think. So they don't even ask that question. If you look at Christianity, you also see many things that don't make sense. And you ask, how can people believe this? It doesn't make sense. Because they don't ask. Because they don't have their intelligence or their asking would be a lack of faith, perhaps. Or there's some kind of pressure or conditioning to accept something, even if it doesn't make sense, and to not ask. So I think that's part of what Prabhupada didn't want in our movement, which is so prevalent outside of, you know, Prabhupada would be on a morning walk and say, and he would make a point and say, and nobody questions this? You know, and we would think, this is so obvious, and we never questioned it. Why are they not asking? Why are they not questioning? So I think that's just a condition in Kali Yuga, where people don't question the obvious. This is such an obvious point, and it's not questioned by many.
Thank you. Yeah, one philosopher, Bertrand Russell, British philosopher, said, most people would rather die than think. Because if we stop to think about what we're doing or what we're thinking, we might have to change. Might have to do, because we're, you know, what is it, Manda, so we're lazy. You know, we don't want to think. We just want to. Anyway, but Prabhupada's waking us up. Srila Prabhupada ki jai!